and welcome to the Watch Your Mouth podcast, the podcast about phrase etymology and why we say the things we say. I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
He's my dad.
And she's my daughter.
That's how that works. Welcome, everybody.
Yay, it is. And thankfully, we're here more than just to let people know how families work. We're here to explore different phrases and idioms. But I say that, and yet today we're going to take a little bit of a different path. I know. Are you excited or scared or both?
You know, they so often go hand in hand, but it's always great when we can branch into the second aspect of our intro and just talk about, you know, the things that we say. It doesn't have to be idioms. It can be anything if it comes out of our mouths.
That's right. That's right. And one of the things that, as we're talking here, one of the things I'm reminded of something that I've believed for a long time about adventure. And you're not really having an adventure if there's not a level of danger involved.
Interesting.
No danger, no adventure. In my opinion, that's just me, but I don't know. So anyway, today, I am going to be talking about a little bit of a song. And it's actually something from my childhood that I remember very well. And it's one of those things that I got thinking, like, why is this so well known? We are actually going to be looking at a very old prayer. And I think you know this prayer. And I'm going to start it. And I want to see how much of you can do. I think you can do it all, but let's give it a shot. I'll start.
Okay.
Now I lay me down to sleep.
Okay, so now I lay me down to sleep, and I pray to God my soul to keep.
Yeah.
Oh, am I still going? Okay. I thought we were doing
more.
A column response type thing, but no, I know there's
no,
more.
Okay. No.
For
no.
If
this
I die before I wake, I pray to him my soul to take.
It's close. I will.
I got the rhyme,
go over
I think.
A couple different variations.
Okay.
What's that?
I got the rhyming words, at least, I think.
Yeah, the version I heard, and again, it's much older than I am, is now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
I feel like I did pretty good reciting that bleak-ass song,
yes.
Poem, prayer.
Did you just describe a prayer as bleak-ass?
I sure did, and I was not wrong to do so.
Yeah, it's – well, I was going to ask what your opinion of this little ditty, this little prayer is. How do you – I mean, kids have been praying this for literal, you know, just centuries almost, I think. So what's your opinion of this little prayer to teach small children to pray?
Bleak.
mention that, yes.
There was a radio game show on in like the 2010s called Don't Make Me Laugh, where comedians had to talk on a topic for 1 minute without making anybody in the audience laugh. And if they started turning too bleak with it, a giant voice came out of the sky and said, bleak. And that's
nice.
In my head all the time. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay, great. Thanks for sharing
No,
do you have other words other than
morbid.
Bleak? Yeah. I think it's funny because I think Carol and I, my wife, for you listening for the first time or haven't heard me mention my wife, Carol, which I think I mentioned pretty much every podcast, every episode. So Carol and I were talking about this because it seems like she's been watching this show, The Vikings, and obviously there's a lot of just violence that people saw every day, and kids were very exposed to the idea of death, and they saw it happen all the time. And I think to us, things that seem bleak and a little more dark and dour, back in the day, it was not abnormal for you had kids and you were going to lose a couple of those kids. You know, obviously there's a lot of disease and they didn't know how to deal with things. So, you know, to lose a child was not that uncommon. So I think for them, it just was like, yeah, it's possible you may not make it out of childhood. So, but
yeah.
I don't think you're wrong.
It's a little hallmark of our privilege that, you know, kids talking about themselves dying on a nightly basis seems a little rough.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think of this prayer and I'm like, wow, that's kind of a bummer. Hey, small child, you might not
Timothy.
Wake up. Timothy!
Please confront your mortality right now.
I think we need to say that in a different voice. Timothy, please confront your mortality.
Daddy, but I don't want to. I just want to go to sleep.
Well, Timothy, you may not wake up. Sweet dreams. Yeah. That was
just sitting back and watching theater today. This is an easy day in the podcasting studio.
That's bad parenting. Okay, so I found out that this is an old prayer. This prayer has been around for a very long time. In fact, there is a little thing I found. I don't think this is true, honestly, but I read somewhere that says President John Adams said this prayer every night before he went to sleep.
Our first toddler president.
Yeah, that's right. And so he would say this prayer a lot. I wonder, you know, I know different beliefs about God, but, you know, I believe there's a God. If those of you who believe there's a God and God hears this prayer all the time, I wonder what he thinks or what God thinks. I don't know. The earliest version of this prayer was apparently written by or showed up in a book by George Wheeler in 1698.
I remember it well.
Would you have guessed that this prayer was that old? Or does that sound about right? Or are you a little surprised?
No, that seems about right, honestly. I don't know that if I had guessed, I would put it... I don't think I would have put it any later. If anything, I think I would have aired earlier.
And of course, again, we talk about this a bit. It very well could have been a lot earlier, but the first time we see it in print is 1698. So surely it had been around for a while earlier than that. So in the name of the book, which I had to include the name of the book for Mr. George Wheeler, who was a clergyman and a travel writer back in the late 1600s. Oh. So the name of the shorter version of the book is, the title is The Protestant Monastery. But I had to include the full title just because it amused me. It says The Protestant Monastery, : or Christian Oeconomics. It starts OEConomics. Do you think?
I do not know what that word
means.
No,
is it supposed to be just economics? It's an older spelling? But I'm not entirely sure. So anyway, The Protestant Monastery or Christian Oeconomics, containing directions for the religious conduct of a family, in parentheses, hymns suited to the several hours of prayers, short tunes to chant several of the hymns.
Oeconomics, household management and agriculture.
It's a real word?
Apparently. I don't know. I did a Google.
you did a Google. Uh-huh. Okay. I actually did find, this is obviously it is in public domain, and you can read this book for free online. I read a little bit of it. It's not what you would call light reading. I will say that. In the book, A Protestant Monastery, and I won't go through the rest of the title. It reads a little bit differently. It's called Upon Lying Down and Going to Sleep. Here I lay me down to sleep. To thee, O Lord, I give my soul to keep. Wake I ever or wake I never. To thee, O Lord, I give my soul to keep forever.
I don't like the meter of that.
How do you feel about that?
The rhythm of it is very unpleasant.
Yeah, how so? Explain.
Like, if you think of, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep, for if I die before I wake, I pray it was for the soul's sake. Yeah. Like, it's got a good lilt.
Yeah,
you could
dance to that.
I'm not going to go too far into like actual poetic like terms because I'm afraid of getting them wrong because it's been a long time since I took linguistics.
I believe them. I don't know what they are. I believe it.
But anyway, so just it's the meter of it is consistent, whereas I feel with that like it is uneven with the original.
Well, I feel like the original,
an uneven
the
meter.
The one I learned, I feel like you could dance to that, right? That's danceable. The second one just uses ever too much. Wake I ever, wake I never, to thee, O Lord, I give my soul to keep forever. I'm like, we get it. They're kind of killing the ever. So they did a rewrite. It is a little more subtle. I don't think it's as bleak, but it's not much better. The weird thing about reading it in this book, because you've seen this as you know have done some of your own research into other topics and your schooling, The S in this book looks like an F. So it looks like here I lay me down to fleep. And so I found that kind of amusing that all the S's look like F's for some reason. And I feel like that's a mistake.
That was how that was notated in the day.
Is fleep a word? Do we think fleep is a word? Could you give us a Google? Could you?
If it was, what would it mean?
It would.
While I Google it, you tell me what fleep
is. Fleep is a type of fabric that's a little bit coarse and yet somehow still soft. That's right off the top of my head. It's wrong because it's not a word.
No, Fleep is actually a flexible messenger that integrates with email and lets you store and share files easily. It's an app, but not an actual word.
Okay, it sounded like obviously an...
It looks like it's a knockoff Slack. I think that's what that is.
So, Milo, I found another version of this prayer, and it apparently was part of a flyer in World War I, and I'll post a picture of it
Was it the original Chick tract?
No, not exactly. They kind of take, you're going to see, they take it in a bit of a different direction. And hey kids, don't forget to visit our Facebook page and join the robust conversations that can happen out there. And when I say robust, I'm talking about our super fan Jane, which I haven't mentioned in a while. So
thanks Jane
in Australia. We love you. Okay, so here's the flyer. And again, you'll see a picture of this. Now I lay me down to sleep. So we're starting in a way that we recognize. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Great. We're on board. We Classic. Like the rhythm. God bless my brother gone to war.
Oh.
Across the seas to France so far. I have a little bit of issue with war and far.
Wait, what year was this?
I don't know. It was World War I.
Okay. And where was the flyer? I'm trying to figure out what accent would fit with that rhyme.
No, don't. This is written in America. War. Across the seas to France so far. Oh, may his fight for liberty save millions more than little me from cruel fates or ruthless blast and bring him safely home at last. Buy United States government bonds.
Oh, so it was, ad pitch for bonds the whole time.
Yeah, that's right. It's a propaganda. It does bring a tear to the eye, doesn't it, though? Just a little bit.
I'm openly weeping.
I don't think you know what that means. I saw that and it just kind of made me feel cynical, and I thought it was kind of funny. Our prayer does pop up again in the year 1737, and the New England Primer.
We're going backwards now. We're jumping around in time, folks.
Well, we started in 1698.
Yeah.
And now we're at 1737, so we're a few years after. Not a ton.
No, but we jumped all the way forward to 1917 or whatever the heck.
Oh, yeah, we did. But I had to throw the bonds in because
I'm enjoying the timeline that we're on.
We're jumping all over the place, people. It's true. And we're actually going to land, for the rest of the episode, we're going to land on the guy who wrote this New England Primer. Now, I have to, Milo, I have a question. Do you like primer or primer?
I feel like primer is what we say here in the U.S. I think primer is more of a U.K. thing, but I may be wrong on that.
I like the sound of primer. It makes me sound fancy.
Yeah, I think that is the fancier sounding friend.
All right. Well, you probably already know who wrote the New England Primer, right? You probably know? No, you don't know. It was... No. Yeah? You were going to say something?
I don't know. Jonathan Swift? I'm trying to think of people around that time. No. That's not even the right time, but...
That's fine. What did Jonathan Swift write?
The Modest Proposal and other satire things.
I think he wrote Gulliver's Travel, right? Gulliver's Travels?
Yes. Swift?
Oh, boy, we're going to have to fact check that one because
yeah, I just remember Modest Proposal because it's the eating babies one.
I'm sorry, what?
Have you never read A Modest Proposal?
Apparently not. I don't read a lot of things about eating babies.
It was a satiric journal article that he wrote that was about classism and was just saying, well, if you don't care about people that much, maybe we should just start eating babies.
Wow.
Yeah, it was actually very revolutionary for the time. It was Jonathan Swift who wrote Gulliver's Travels. Good job.
Hey, I read that. I actually read that one. Okay, let's talk about the man who wrote the New England Primer for just a few minutes. This is going to be, I think it's going to be a little bit of a shorter episode because, and I'll explain why. What, are you upset about that? You made a face.
No, I was right about the time period in which he was alive. Oh, I was very actually close. I was within a decade of...
Really? Okay. So, Milo, we're going to talk about this the next time, and I know we're jumping all around in the timeline. Have fun editing this one. So, in 1737, this guy wrote the New England Primer, and that's when I saw the prayer really pop up again and kind of got more popularized, and it was written by a man named Thomas Fleet.
Oh.
We're going to park on Mr. Thomas Fleet for the rest of the episode. And that's actually at the end of this, you'll see how this leads into my next episode.
Okay.
And you'll see how. I was going to try to fit it all into one episode, but it's just going to be a little bit too much.
Two-parter.
Okay. So, yes, exactly. Two-parter. Thomas Fleet was born on September 8th in 1685 in Tilstock, England.
Tilstock is fun to say.
Let's say it together. You ready? One, two, three.
Tilstock.
Till
the beauty of Zoom. Impossible to talk in synchrony.
That's right. So the family later moved to Bristol, England, which you've probably heard of.
I have.
Thomas Fleet grew up, and one day he was working in Bristol. And the this account I read said the notorious... Henry Sacheverell. Do you like that name?
Sacheverell?
S-A-C-H-E-V-E-R-E-L-L. Sacheverell?
Sacheverell? Maybe? I don't know.
Anyways, it doesn't matter. So Henry Sacheverell was an English High Church Anglican clergyman who was passing through town. Apparently, there was some type of an impromptu parade for this man because people had gathered along the route, waving flags and cheering him. And so that begs the question, why were people doing this? Henry, our good friend Henry, we're just going to lay off his last name, Pastor Henry or whatever, he was kind of infamous for preaching and printing controversial sermons against the established Congregationalists of England.
Oh, bad boy.
And yeah, a little bit. So he was a bit infamous and people kind of liked him. He was a bit of a rebel. The House of Commons had ruled that their publication of these sermons amounted to malicious and seditious libels.
Oh boy. Do you have like specifics of what they found objectionable?
I didn't. And I looked, I really wanted to find, because I'm like, what was the big... I think he was kind of going against royalty and just, who knows, at that time it probably wasn't even that, something we wouldn't even think that's that big of a deal. And they were just like, what? You can't say that.
Nope.
So there is this procession going down the street, and our friend Thomas Fleet, as we've established, is working, and he decided to make his own flag. Because people were waving flags and stuff and cheering, whatever thing. So he makes his own flag, and it says he hurriedly made a halter top and he tied it to a pole. Would you think that's like women's clothing halter top? Or do you think that's like a halter that is on a horse to lead a horse? What would your guess be?
Probably not the modern piece of apparel, the halter top, if I had to guess. I'm guessing there's some 1700s version of that word that we don't use today.
Yeah, I have to imagine. Well, it's not going to be a halter top the way... when's the last time you've seen someone wear a halter top? That's probably got to be a minute, right?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I feel like that was real big in the 90s and not the, you know, not that era, because that would be a lot of shoulder to show, a lot of shoulder and back to show in that age. I'm not sure they'd be into that.
Yeah, it'd be a bit lascivious, don't you think?
Oh, we're bringing out the 10-point words today.
Well, I had malicious and seditious, so I'm like, why not go to, you know, just kind of add to that.
That feels like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It's, say the three words again.
Malicious, seditious, and lascivious.
Yeah, there you go. There's a whole crew of supervillains or something for you.
Well, going up against the all that is common and decent, I don't know what's going on. So anyway, Thomas Fleet is waving this homemade flag out the window, and he catches the attention of the crowd. And apparently the crowd considered this a sign of contempt and disrespect and began throwing stones and other objects at the window where Fleet was standing, and then proceeded to storm the house in pursuit of him.
Wow. Hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah, they got real mad, and I was like, I'm trying to figure out, like, what was it about this that made them angry? It seems like Mr. Fleet had a bit of a sense of humor, and I think he was trying to have some fun. And people kind of knew, they took it as mocking, so they're like, what if we went and beat him up? So Mr. Fleet made his way to the roof of the building and made his escape running and hopping to other rooftops of the adjacent buildings. So he did the classic Mission Impossible, running along the rooftops to escape the angry mob. So he jumps from rooftop to rooftop trying to get away from the angry crowd that wants to beat him, maybe to death. But he gets away and he disappears down a quiet street and then moves to London.
Oh, just straight away. Because just runs off the street and straight into London town.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I don't know how long of a run that was, but he, apparently people were so mad at this guy. He's like, I can't live here anymore. Yeah. I have to move to a whole different city and hopefully they can't find me there.
Religious pilgrimage.
And boy, if any of you, yeah, if you, any of you listeners can give us some context here, that would be great. After remaining there for a time, Thomas Fleet decided to return to Bristol with the hopes that his unintended offense had been forgotten about. But no. Uh-oh. And he was still in trouble in Bristol. So realizing that he was no longer safe, he decides to move to America. And he moves to Boston in the American colonies at the time. And so he arrives at Boston in 1712. And he established a printing shop with T, and I don't know the rest of his name, but it's T. Crump.
Ooh, that's real good.
I like that. And they lived, get this, Milo, and really this is just for you. So he opens a printing shop with T. Crump on Pudding Lane. Wow.
It's pretty good.
I know. Let's just take a minute. Let's appreciate T. Crump on Pudding Lane. On June 8, 1715, Mr. Fleet married Elizabeth Goose. And she was the daughter of a wealthy man, Isaac Vergoose, and his wife Elizabeth, and they eventually shortened the name to Goose from Vergoose.
These names are really out of this world.
and that's a little hint to where I'm going on my next episode, is this last name, Goose. They were married. So Elizabeth Goose and Thomas Fleet are married in 1715 on June 8th. And their wedding was conducted by a man named Cotton Mather.
What is the deal with the names today? Cotton Mather is great.
Do you know who Cotton Mather is?
No.
He was one of the guys involved in the Salem witch trial.
Really? Okay.
He was one of the main judges.
Oh, no. So a bad guy.
Well... Yeah, we were, but at the time, yeah, we are not going to look at him with any fondness, but at the time, he was a very well-respected man. Mather was a New England Puritan clergyman and a prolific writer, educated at Harvard. In 1685, Cotton Mather joined his father. I know we're getting away from the prayer, and so forgive me for this, but this is all about the names.
It's an impromptu parade of amazing names. Go on.
That's right. Do you want to know the name, and I know you do, of Cotton Mather's dad?
Of course I do. You know me.
His name was... I do. And it's. I think you're going to like it. His first name was Increase.
Increase?
Increase Mather was Cotton Mather's dad.
Did we step into like an alternative history thing where everybody is like named nouns and like actions and shit? What is this?
Noun and verb names? I don't know, but this... I don't know what happened,
Cotton,
but anyway.
Increase, Goose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pudding Lane, Pudding, T-Crump.
Clump.
T-Crump sounds like a rapper, though, doesn't it?
Yep, and it's a distant descendant of T-Pain.
Yeah, I think it'd be little T-Crump. Wouldn't that be a good name? So, Cotton Mather, educated at Harvard... 1685, he joined his father, Increase, as minister of the Congregationalist Old North Meeting House in Boston, where he continued to preach for the rest of his life, and he was involved in the Salem Witch Trials, which, you know, that's fun. Okay, so we're going back to Fleet, and this is going to be a nod for my next episode. You know, in that time, people kind of, they all lived together. Mm-hmm. And so, at one point... his mother-in-law, Elizabeth, lived with them. And so you've got, apparently the daughter was Elizabeth, the mother-in-law is Elizabeth. And so they lived with them. And Elizabeth, the mother-in-law, spent her whole time in the nursery and wandering about the house, pouring forth an unmelodious strains, an abundance of rhymes for the amusement of Fleet's infant son, which basically really annoyed everyone in the whole neighborhood, but really annoyed Thomas Fleet.
Oh, no.
He did not like it.
An uncharitable man.
Yeah, I know. Very much so. He tried for a long time. It says, and I like the way this, where I found this article put it. It says, he endeavored for a long time by every means in his power to put an end to it, but his good mother-in-law would not be silenced. So, finally, he said, what if I wrote these all down? And it says he did, and he published them in the book form under the title Songs for the Nursery or Mother Goose's Melodies for Children. You've probably heard. What was that?
This is like the end of a Marvel movie where you see some obscure, you know, Marvel villain from the comics in the 80s come on screen, and all the nerds in the audience are like, oh! And, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And you are, of course, familiar with Mother Goose.
I am. She's my mother.
I think you are.
She's your mother. She's all of our mothers.
What? I don't... Okay. I didn't... Sure. So you could say that this whole thing has put me on a little bit of a wild goose chase. Huh? Huh? Wild goose chase? No? Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I've been moving very fleetly on that goose chase.
Oh, boy. We just lost listeners. We can't afford that. you know, it's funny because as I was doing the research on this, I found a few places that said, this is the origin of Mother Goose. And it's not. This is Mother Goose is way earlier than this story. And in fact, the one episode my wife Carol did, she did talk a little bit about Mother Goose. And again, I was going to try to bring Mother Goose into this episode, but, you know, I think we can do a whole episode right on Mother Goose and all the stories that she told. A little bit more about Thomas Fleet. There's this whole story that he wrote all this stuff down, and John Fleet or Thomas Fleet was this important publisher back in the 1700s. So he's kind of a known name, especially for people who are real history buffs, American history buffs. So they will have heard of Thomas Fleet. And but it does say it's kind of disputed about whether he actually published a book about Mother Goose at all. And apparently some historians believe this story was concocted by his great-grandson, John Fleet Elliott, in 1860.
Oh.
So, you know, I'm not entirely sure what happened here, but whether it's true or not, but I found another old book on the internet from 1869 called Mother Goose's Melodies for Children or Songs for the Nursery. And it has notes, music, and account of the goose over the Vergoose family. And in that, the author, Henry Louis Stevens and Gaston Fay, there's another name for you, Milo, Gaston Fay.
It's real good.
They wrote a tribute to John Fleet Elliott, who is the great-great-grandson of Elizabeth Goose. But I wanted to throw that in there because I was really amused by how they describe, in this book, they describe the cover of this the book that may not have existed. They said this book was that had on the cover something probably intended to represent a goose with a very long neck and a mouth wide open. That is how they described. That's not exactly flattering, is it?
No, not flattering to that artist.
And the last thing I found here was another little comment on Mr. Thomas Fleet that I wanted to share. It says, it is traditionally reported that Fleet was not blessed with as sweet-tempered a wife and daughters as he could have wished for. On one occasion, he invited a friend to dine with him on pouts, a kind of fish that esteemed a great delicacy, and of which he knew his friend to be remarkably fond. His domestic affairs, however, did not move along very smoothly that day, and when they sat down to table, the gentleman remarked that the pouts were wanting. "Oh, no," said Fleet, "only look at my wife and daughters." So, Mr. Fleet thought he was pretty funny. So, you want pouty? The fish? We're not short of pouts. Look at my wife and daughters. They'll get you the pouts. Hilarious.
He didn't seem like a very nice man. Very critical of his wife and daughter and mother-in-law. Just kind of a malcontent, it seems.
Yeah. He is a bit of a malcontent, which is a good word. I like the word malcontent. So I know this episode is a little bit weird. This is a little bit of a different episode. We start with a prayer. We end with Mother Goose. But there it is. That's what we've got. Milo, what if anything stood out to you in this episode? Was there anything noteworthy?
I like that it was a two-parter, because now y'all get to wait for the prestige of how the Mother Goose story pays off. Looking forward to that. I think I mostly appreciated the parade of names. Very, very fond of T. Crump of Pudding Street.
Yeah.
Hey, nailed it.
Pudding Lane.
I learned a thing. Pudding Lane. Oh, no. It all comes crashing down around me. Yep, I'm going to say it's my favorite. How about you?
I was surprised where this one took me. I didn't expect to go into, colonial America with Mr. Fleet, but I was kind of intrigued by Thomas Fleet and his whole story. And I just thought it was kind of funny that he's trying to be a smart aleck with waving that flag, and these people just stormed and they wanted to, I don't know if they wanted to kill him, but they wanted to beat him up.
Yeah,
and he just ran from rooftop to rooftop. They couldn't catch him, and so he's like, "I got to move to America, where he marries the daughter of Mother Goose." Except not really. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of a fun story.
Maybe this will turn out to not be true in the following episode, but it seems like we have to thank for Mother Goose a single flag made across the ocean, wild
across the pond, as it were, across the pond,
the goose pond.
Yeah, so that's it. That's my episode for today.
Lovely. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. And we hope you tune in again with us when we talk about Mother Goose. You should subscribe on your listening platform of choice so that you can do that. And while you're there, you may as well review us there as well, or on Apple Podcasts. That helps us out a lot, helps us find new listeners, which we enjoy. You can also join our Facebook group to find the pictures that David was talking about, and also updates about our episodes and all that jazz. Thank you to Silly Linguistics, our network. We appreciate them as much as we appreciate Tony Gebhardt for our theme music. Anything else?
I think we covered it. Good job.
Yay! I ticked all the boxes.
Yay!
Thank you so much all for being here with us today. We hope to catch you on a future episode. But in the meantime, I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
Stay curious and carry a hatchet.